irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I'm in the studio tonight with a very special guest host, Mr. Henry Park from Henry's Western Roundup, blogspot.com. I can do it. You can do it.
Yes, you can. www, you forgot.
I did forget the www. But Bobby Jean tonight is getting an award in Newhall for their contribution to the arts, and which it is well deserved, Bobby Jean and Jim Bell.
Very well deserved.
So Bobby Jean will not be with us this evening, and we have Henry in here.
I will be impersonating Bobby Jean.
He will be, and he does a good job.
Why, people hear us on the phone, and they always think it's Bobby Jean.
Can't tell them apart.
Right.
It's the beard, though, when you're sitting in the studio with him, trust me.
It's the giveaway, yeah.
It's like, oh, there's my Trump, believe me. Big Lee. Okay, let's get this rolling the show. No roundup. You're not going to do a roundup tonight because, of course, you just did one.
That's right.
And you have no notes with you, so we have no idea what's in the roundup tonight. But go to www.henryswesternroundup.com or
blogspot.com,
and you can read all about the new one he just posted Sunday.
Read all about how they're trying to bring back the underground.
Right. And many other things in the little blog spot there. Okay, the writer's block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And we're in the business to help new writers and format stuff and help you get your stuff edited, proofread, ready to print and printed and in book form and on your bookshelf. So if you are a new writer and you're looking for some help and really can't figure out how to go around doing everything that you need to do to get a book on the shelf, give us a call. The number is 805-795-3165, and we'll be more than happy to help you. We've got some pretty nice titles out. One of called Reservations and Escape from Infinity, of course, Jonah Blue, End of Line. There's several nice titles out by Tuscany Bay at the moment, and they're all available, on Amazon, all your online booksellers. And if you go to your local bookstore, if you want to order it, you can order them. And then, of course, by Out West, and it is your source, your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. If you're interested in ordering from their catalog online store only, their number is 877-340-9378. And if you're interested in attending their monthly concert series, and this October is the last one,
That's
right. It's the 28th, I believe, a Saturday this month. It features Almeda Bradshaw. The bookie and I are really going to that one because I got to tell you, she's one of my favorite musicians. She sat right here one night and I just fell in love. So she's just the nicest lady and just a wonderful performer. So the number there is direct, 661-347-9700. And if you tell them that you heard this on the writer's block, they, of course, will knock your ticket price from $25 to $20.
Ooh.
And if you like bringing a whole slew of people, like Bobby Jean says, hey, we may even knock it down a little bit further. So there you have it. And let's see. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service. TFM Truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today, 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski or any one of the fine Target at TFM staff. Tell them you heard it on the writer's block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry, bar none. So call at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. No fooling you. You won't be sorry you did. And I know these folks, and they're just absolutely wonderful. The bookie gave me something that she wanted me to let you know. Oh, incidentally, I wanted to thank all of the readers that have purchased Jonah Blue. It's become quite the seller on Amazon, and I really, really, really do appreciate it. And it's now got a big ad campaign on Facebook, so if you haven't seen it there, you must be half blind or don't have a Facebook account. Okay. This is for all of our future guests that have already contacted the Writer's Block and are interested in being on the show and have been told that we're not booking until after December 1st. You will receive an email with all the information you will need to be on the show. Return all the information, and then we can give you a possible booking date. It will be on a first-come basis only, so please read all the instructions and the information carefully. They are booked, or we are booked, actually, through April next year. And the bookie asks, please, 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 that you follow this, if you will. Of course, the email address is guestwb@yahoo.com. And let's talk a little bit about our guest tonight, because she is a very interesting young lady. And I got to find her sheet here, because she didn't send me. I lost you. But jeez, Katie, I lost you. I don't know where you are here. Ah, there you go. Katie Salidis, she's a best-selling author. She's known for her unique genre-blending style that led to the award-winning paranormal dystopian thriller, Dissension, which is the book we'll be discussing tonight. Host of the indie YouTube talk show, Spilling Ink, nerd doctor, fangirl, Las Vegas native, and supermom to three awesome kids, Katie gives new meaning to the term sleep deprived, and I'm a parent. I know that feeling. Since 2010, she's penned four best-selling series: The Immortalis, Old Town Pack, Little Werewolf, and Roan, award-winning chronicles of the uprising. And as her not-so-secret alter ego, Rosalind Sparks, she is a USA Today best-selling author of romance with a naughty side, and that's kind of true. Actually, if you would please welcome Miss Katie Salidis to the Writer's Block. Katie, you with us?
Wow, what an intro. Thank you.
Well, you wrote it.
It's always nice to hear it read, though, by somebody else.
Well, yeah, but you know, we ask you guys to write your own intros, because what you say is what gets read on the air, and if you lie, well, then all your friends will know. So there you have it.
Well, there you go. And I love it. It sounds great.
Well, you know, you're right. It always sounds better coming from somebody else. Henry, are you over there?
Absolutely.
We have to wake Henry up every now and then.
Who, me?
Hold on just a second. So I did, as we spoke the other night, you and I spoke, I did read Dissension. And you were actually very nice and kind enough to send me the other five books. Dissension is the first in a six-book series. That is correct, is it not?
That is correct. There's
okay.
Six total books split into two separate trilogies.
Right. And what a dynamite story.
Grabber.
Oh, my God. It's from the first paragraph, it's got you. And I don't know that anyone ever would have thought that a vampire, much less a female vampire, would be a gladiator. But yet, there is Miri, and she is one. And it's amazing to follow her transition from almost animal-like to almost human-like. And what can you tell us about this book without kind of like doing spoiler alerts?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it too much. Well, the idea for the story came one night while I was sitting and talking with my husband. And we were discussing common trends in fiction, what's hot right now in the market, and what really hasn't been done.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, vampires, they come and go. They're kind of a cyclical thing. You like them, they get hot, then they cool down, then they come back again. So we thought, you know, vampires always come back into fashion. So let's see what hasn't been done with vampires. Let's make them the underdog. let's make them the hero instead of the villain, and turn humanity into the bad guy. And so I kind of ran with that. And then I went and thought, okay, well, let's see, you know, let's dystopian. That's another popular genre right now. So let's set this in the future after the apocalypse has turned the world upside down. And we've now got humans on top, and all of the supernatural creatures have become the underdogs. And the story kind of just wrote itself after that. Mira was born, and she was such a fun character to work with that book 1 through 6 just kind of popped right one after the other.
Well, it's the Chronicles of an Uprising. And I don't want to go much further than that because it gets kind of complicated, but it is a great story, I have to tell you. And your prologue actually really sets the tone because, of course, you start your prologue on December 21st of 2012 when the Mayan calendar ended and, of course, the world was supposed to come to an end. And in your book, it did, or at least partly. So
right,
its story blew me away. It just totally blew me away, and I was just absolutely so happy that I read it. And then I got hooked, and I wanted more and more.
I can't tell you how happy that makes me, and I'm glad that I was able to send you the other copies. I would love to, you know, when you get the chance to read the rest of them, hear your thoughts on how the series progressed.
Well, I certainly will be happy to email you that.
Awesome. I love getting feedback from readers of all kinds because it lets me know, one, that I'm giving the reader a satisfactory experience with the books that I'm creating, and two, it lets me know that what they like so that I can turn around and write more of that.
Sure.
I've got a Facebook group that I talk to all the time that it's kind of like my personal little readers group, and I'm always asking, what do you want me to write next? What are you guys interested in? Give me some ideas. Does this sound interesting? Because ultimately, my job is to make the reader happy. So if I can find out what they love and what they enjoy reading and put that out for them, then I'm doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a favor, never make it like Dracula meets Billy the Kid. I have to say that.
Westerns aren't my thing.
Okay, good. And only because Henry's sitting here. We actually discussed that. Was it Dracula meets Billy the Kid?
Yes. Yes,
John Carradine
versus Dracula.
Which was
just on TCM a week ago.
And what a hoot that movie is. I mean, it's so bad it's good. You know, it's just. Yeah. But anyway, I think your vampire stories have gone. You know, because like with starting with Bram Stoker. Henry and I were just speaking about Bram Stoker before the show started. I mean, his book on Dracula was like at the time the definitive horror story. It really, really, truly, I read that book cover to cover in like a day and a half, and it scared the living hell out of me. And not because he's descriptive, although he is somewhat descriptive, but the way he builds his stories. Watching Dracula crawl down the side of the castle like a lizard. You know, it's stuff like that that really, really grabs your attention in that book. And your vampires are different, but they're still vampires and they still feed on human blood or whatever. Actually, they're fed rat blood, aren't they? In prison.
Yeah, well, in the prisons they are. And that's the thing. The humans used their need for blood, however little it might be, as a way to promote prejudice against them and turn them into nothing but beasts. And
right.
Who cares if a vampire gets killed in the arena because, hey, they're not human. It doesn't matter.
Right, right. And notice it keeps them subjugated. So, and then they spend their days locked up in these little cells. And it is such 180 degrees from every vampire story you've ever read, Anne Rice included. It's such a different story that it grabs you. It just truly does.
Yeah, I was struck by how you really created such a whole unique and believable world that's so different from our world. Down to the, I love the details like the UV torches.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
I think that's tell what that means.
Yes.
Because
explain
context,
what they are because a lot of people are not going to know.
Well, you know, the UV light, that's what the vampires are essentially allergic to.
Right.
So that's what fries their skin. They don't have the protective melanin in their skin anymore to stop them from getting sunburned. So their sunburns are excruciating. So the UV torches are essentially like flashlights, just high-beamed flashlights with the UV bulbs in them.
Right.
So they can quick flash them at a vampire and singe whatever part touches their skin.
Right.
Now, also in the prisons, there's that scene where they flash the lights and all of the light bulbs in the ceiling are those UV bulbs. So
right.
Everyone gets a good dose of it because Mira mouthed off to someone.
Right. Yeah, and it's everybody's mad at her because she's got a big mouth.
Exactly. Her mouth gets her in trouble. But ultimately, it shows that she won't be broken. And that's what ends up aiding
right.
her on her quest.
Right. And she and well I just so much I want to say about this book that I really don't want to get too badly into it because it's such a great story and Dissension it certainly is a good title for it because the dissent certainly
Thank
is
you.
There and I like the
yeah,
fact
and all of the titles follow in that theme so mm-hmm. there's Dissension is book one, Complication is book two, Revolution would be book three, and that's the first trilogy. And then Transition starts book four, Retribution is book five, and Annihilation is book six.
Now, Miri started out not as a vampire. Of course, she started out as a normal woman. And she was turned, but she never really talks too much about who turned her. I don't recall her talking too much about who turned her.
She's very closed off in the first book because she doesn't know who to trust.
Right.
Now, as you progress into the series, in the book Transition, you actually get a lot of her history. So
oh, okay.
you'll learn all of that. Once her struggle's been established and you know her, then you can step back in time a little bit and learn how she became the way she did.
Right.
Because she didn't start out as a hard character.
Uh-huh.
She was a very innocent and sweet girl to begin with.
Right. Well, she has to survive, but the fact that she becomes a gladiator and a winning gladiator, I might add. I mean, she's an ass kicker, for lack of a better
right.
term.
Very few people, very few vampires have lasted as long as she has in the arena.
Right.
Not to say that she's the longest, but she is definitely one of the longer standing vampires in the arena.
Well, she's not the strongest and she's not the biggest, but she is definitely the smartest, and
yes.
she knows how
definitely.
To use her brains. To defeat them, and you know they're going on brute strength, and you know the vampire thing, and she's going on smarts and speed.
And a lot of times that's how it is too.
It's sure.
The ones who are too overconfident in themselves don't think about the other person. They just think, I'm big, I'm strong, I can win. And it's the one who's thinking, who's quick, and who knows how to move around that ends up surviving.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your YouTube show you've got going on.
So Spilling Ink is a weekly web show that started between me and another indie author as a way to reach out to the community and meet other authors, learn about everybody's path to publishing, and it's been really fun. Every week we bring on two guests, and we have two different hosts. There's three total of us, but only two on at a show. And we talk about the ins and outs of publishing, working with publicists, going indie, going traditional, big press, small press, learning how everyone's journey takes them to the final product, which is, you know, book on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we're also learning some of the tools and tricks of the trade in order to make ourselves better. You know, whether we're an indie who needs marketing advice,
mm-hmm.
or whether a new author looking for how to query agents. So learning from everybody else's journey has been a fun and educational experience.
Mm-hmm. And you do this once a week?
Yep. We just came back we're calling it season three. We took a break over the summer, and we've got, I think we're booked through November at this point.
Oh, wow.
The show's just about every week. And we're still booking, so we're still looking for authors, publicists, editors, agents, anybody in the publishing realm.
Mm-hmm.
We're still seeking new guests to come on and talk with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, hell, put my name down there. I'll be happy to come in and talk to you.
That's awesome. I will send you an email once the show's
sure.
done.
Sure. You know, Tuscany Bay Books, that's what we do. And, of course, then we talk to writers all the time here. And plus, I am an author. And so, I mean, we got the best of both worlds sitting here. Well, and besides that, there's no shame lost in this bottling. Henry also is a writer.
It really is a lot of fun, though, to talk to people because you learn.
Is.
Everybody's got a different experience, no matter how each one of us came to writing,
mm-hmm.
we all have a slightly different path, and it's really interesting to see how each one splits off And we all end up with the same thing. We have our books. They're published.
Right.
They're out there
right.
for readers to enjoy.
Right. Now, as long as you brought that up, tell us a little bit about how you got into writing.
I've kind of always been a writer. I've always, you know, jotted down stories, created little worlds, you know, used my imagination to deliver myself from boredom, so to speak. And it wasn't until my oldest daughter was born that I actually started really sitting down and saying, you know what, I'm going to write a novel and see where it goes. And I didn't intend to publish it at first. I just wanted to write it. And once it was done, you know, I had people reading it. And of course, there's always a suggestion, hey, you should publish this. You should, you know, get this out there, make it a book. And it kind of snowballed from there. I tried to query some agents at the start of it, back when vampires were right at their height during the Twilight era. And eventually I just thought, you know, I kind of just want to see what self-publishing is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the plunge, and man, was it a learning curve. That first book, I made probably 1.5 million mistakes.
Oh, sure.
And it was quite the experience, but I enjoyed it, though. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed meeting readers, that kind of one-on-one experience of, you know, talking to them, and if they say, oh, we found an error in the book, I can go back and fix it because I'm able to edit my own stuff being published on my own. So I learned a lot. I got to know a lot of readers, and it really kind of made me feel like the indie community was where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just continued on from there, publishing each book one after the other. I started up my own imprint, Rising Sign Books,
mm-hmm.
and I've just gone from there. I do publishing. I do some formatting on the side as a freelancer, and I'm still learning marketing, obviously. Mm-hmm. Aren't we all?
Well, yeah, we just do shameless self-promotion here. I mean, that's, you know, what it's all about.
I like that, shameless self-promotion.
Go ahead, feel free to use it.
I love it, I will.
But I mean,
yeah, I started in 2010, and I've been publishing books ever since.
Wow, look at you.
And I love it. I love writing and connecting with my readers.
Uh-huh. Now, who do you use as a printing platform for your business, for your books?
I've gone through two different services. I've used Lightning mm-hmm. Direct,
mm-hmm.
and I've also used CreateSpace. Mm-hmm. And really, it depends on what I want to do with it,
uh-huh.
which one I use. Because CreateSpace, I found, is a little less friendly when it comes to going to, say, Barnes & Noble and doing a signing.
Right.
Whereas Lightning is a little bit easier to get into Barnes & Noble because they like the ability to be able to return books.
Right.
So it really depends on what I want to do, what the ultimate goal of the book is, uh-huh. where I want to go.
Right. Because we use primarily CreateSpace as a platform for printing, and they seem to do a really, really good job. And we get our books in a kind of a day because they're right there in San Bernardino, so we're just right down the road from them as far as their printing facilities go. So...
Yeah, and they're very cost-effective, too, if you're doing your own shows and you're going out to events and you just bring your own books.
Exactly.
They're very cost-effective.
Exactly. But a lot of people, you know, like you started, and like I have learned over the years, I mean, I don't even know what book number I'm on now. My wife, Jerry's the bookie. She could probably tell me. I learned don't edit myself. Don't ever do that because you don't see the errors. You know, you think that everything looks good, and you know, and you find out, oh man, that sucked. You know, Jesus, a whole paragraph that doesn't mean a damn thing. You know, so
yeah, no matter how good you are, you cannot find your own errors.
No,
editing is one of those things you must hire out for.
You have to hire an editor, and you know, you can find really good editors, and they're not that much money. I mean, for you know, in the grand scheme of things. We charge $20 an hour for editing at Tuscany Bay, and you know what? Guys are glad to pay it because it's it gives them an out, and they don't have to worry about you know catching their own mistakes. And then we also recommend like 2 and 3 edits plus a proofread. So I mean, you know, you're editing for always for something. You know, it's so I don't know how you edit your books or who what you require when your editors work on your books. In fact, if you would like to speak to that, I'm sure our audience would like to hear that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely advise anybody out there to hire an editor that you can trust. Get a sample before you actually hire them to make sure that mm-hmm. they're catching mistakes, that you can work with their style. And sometimes it takes a few tries to find an editor that you can work with.
Yes, it does.
Because you both have a different style.
Right.
And you want to make sure that communication is there.
Right.
I've been lucky that I found an editor early on that I absolutely adore. She is wonderful. She's worked on almost every single one of my books. We know each other well enough. We've worked so long together mm-hmm. that she can just say a few key words and I know exactly what she means.
Mm-hmm.
So the editing process has gone a lot smoother.
Sure.
But yeah, I wouldn't be where I am without her.
Yeah.
And anytime I have a book ready, I'm calling on her and saying, when can you fit me into your schedule? Because I want you to look at my book.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I'm kind of reticent to work with an editor that wants to change my manuscript, that wants to change my story. I've written it that way for a reason. And oftentimes they don't get that. You know, what they get is, well, this actually would work better. Well, no, because if you look at the context before it and after it, no, it wouldn't work better. But, hey, I'm picky.
No, and that's something that they need to consider, too, if
right.
they're looking at an editor. What type of editor are they looking for?
Right.
A developmental editor is going to be that one that says,
right.
hey, let's work on the manuscript, the plot, and make it a little smoother, whereas
right.
you're going to have a line editor or a copy editor who's going to work on the nuts and bolts.
Right, right. Work
and
on
you've
spelling
got to know what kind of editor you're working with and what you need.
Correct, correct. When you first started out Dissension, it's a story that it really comes from a dark side. I wouldn't you say, Henry?
Absolutely. It's grim.
It really truly is.
I don't mean
is.
That in a negative way, but I mean it's not hearts and flowers.
When you were thinking about this, did you actually dream about any of it?
As far as like nightmares go,
no. Just dreams.
I do remember those times. Let's see, that was about 2014 when I first started writing Dissension.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was 2013. It was published early 2014. That was actually a dark time for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands to reason that some of that bled into the writing, which gives it the realistic feel, too.
Right. Right.
It does come from a very dark place.
It kind of shows. Like I said, it's a wonderful story, and the dark side really doesn't bother the book at all. But I've noticed also in that some of your scenes go right up to the edge, and then you back off a little bit. It's like I don't want to go that far into the gore. I'm going to leave it right mm-hmm. there. Let your imagination take you there if you want to go there. Which I really liked a lot. See, I don't do that.
There's certain things that I allude to.
Right.
Some of the horrors that Mira has to endure, but I did not want to write them out on paper. I didn't want to really traumatize my readers too much, but I wanted it known that she was living an absolutely horrid existence.
Oh yeah, in a dank cell by herself on a concrete bed. It just was horrid. And then she would have to lay there and heal after being treated with the UV flashlights and all the other stuff.
Oh, and the light box torture.
Right,
she went through a lot of hell.
Yeah, she did. Let's talk about your process a little bit. And I know, Henry's a writer as well, and I know Henry's constantly working on something. He does his podcast, and then he writes for, True West Magazine. He reviews their films. And, Henry's always got something going. In fact, you're going off to Alabama next week?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, going off to meet with the stars of The Cowboy Way, Alabama.
Right. Alabama, yeah. So he's going to be out there. Yeah, so Henry is like a busy guy, too. I was really lucky to get him in here tonight with me, actually.
Thank you.
Talk about your process a little bit, Katie, if you wouldn't mind. Let's go through your day. No, I don't want to go through your day, but, do you write in the morning or do you write in the afternoons? Do you write late at night? Do you have a certain schedule that you try to keep? Do you try to do so many words a week or day? All right, let's start there.
I try to set goals for myself and try being the operative word. I'm a nighttime writer. During the day, I've got three kids, so
right.
I'm constantly running kids to and from appointments, getting them to school and back. And I've got a little one who's not even in school yet, so she's with me all day. So there's no time to hear myself think during the day.
Uh-huh.
So usually about time, about 8 o'clock is bedtime in our house. Uh-huh. And I'm very militant about that because when the kids go to bed, it's my work time.
Right.
And if I don't get work time in, then nothing gets done because from 8 o'clock until round about midnight is the only time during the day where I have enough quiet to hear myself think.
Ah, yeah. Well,
and I try and cram as much as I can into those 4 hours.
Do you try to fit in so many words during that 4 hour period, or do you just work on substance?
Depending on what part of a story I'm working on, if I'm doing the first draft, I aim for about 1,000 words a night, and I'd like to just word see those as fast as possible to get them on the page.
Sure.
I've always been a believer in get the story on the paper first and then revise it. No matter how crappy that first draft is, as long as it gets finished, there's something to work with. But if I spend too much time trying to edit and revise and stop myself, I'll never finish a story. So it's word spew, get it on the page, and hopefully 1,000 words a night is my goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm in the revision phase, I've got a story I'm already working on, I tend to work chapter by chapter and try and get one chapter really looked at and gone over, you know, maybe once or twice in that time per night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was kind of curious about when you're writing essentially a double trilogy, how much plotting ahead do you do? Do you have it all worked out before you start writing?
I'm not a plotter by any stretch of the imagination, but I do write to-do lists for my characters. So I kind of know some goals for them, where they need to be, but I don't know exactly when they're going to hit those goals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a plot. I kind of know where the end is going to be, and I know certain things they have to do to get to that end. But where they fit into, you know, which part of the story is kind of up in the air. It kind of comes out organically.
Right. Now, I know we've talked to a lot of writers. Well, two and a half years we've been doing this. We've talked to a lot of writers. And without question, they have all said the same thing. When they sit down to start a book, they know where it starts. They know where it's going to end. It's putting the center in it that requires the outline, or at least a thought in their head about where they're going to go with it. The to-do list is a good way of doing it.
Yes, it is.
You know, and I'm sure that you probably got the same feeling, that you know how it's going to start and you know how it's going to end. It's
ultimately,
the center.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the center
you
of the book.
You got the idea.
Right. Well, yeah, that's always the idea. It's like people ask me, they go, well, you know, do you use an outline? No, I don't. No, I know where each chapter is going. So it's just filling in the blanks in the chapters. So I guess that's
now on Spilling Ink, I have interviewed a few authors who are avid outliners, and I've seen some of their pegboards where they have just cards with all kinds of things written on them and the strings tying one to the other. I mean, serious outlines
that
are as scary as they are admirable. And I look at that and I freak out because I don't know how anybody can do that.
I don't either.
My brain doesn't work that way.
No, I'm not that organized.
No, that's a real screenwriter method.
Yeah, it really truly is.
Yeah.
Well, that's something else that Henry does. He's a screenwriter.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
But I hate doing index cards.
You know,
yeah. I know there are some writers that, like, personally, you know, keep 3M in business with Posties. So.
Yeah, I believe it. But, you know, it takes all kinds. And there's a 100 shades of gray in between that. You can be a partial pantser or a partial plotter and, you know, have outlines for maybe certain scenes. Or maybe you wing it and, you know, once you hit a snag, you have to go back and rewrite stuff.
Right, right.
It takes all kinds, as long as the story gets out there.
Do you sit when you're writing and all of a sudden an idea comes to you about something that's going to happen a little bit later, you think, probably? So you'll sit and you'll write that scene and then save it?
The sad thing is, though, normally those ideas happen in, like, the shower. You know, in the worst possible place where you have no paper to write with, you get that spark of an idea. Oh, that's how it happened.
Yeah,
and you
have
no way to write it down. And then you're rushing out of the shower, towel on you, trying to find something to scribble it down real quick.
Yep. I totally get that. I don't have ideas. And I get my ideas when I'm dreaming. So, and fortunately, or fortunately for me, the book that I just finished, Jonah Blue, which Henry actually has a copy of it tonight, I've dreamt that whole story, and I woke up and I actually remembered it from start to finish. And I remembered his name. I remembered everything about it. So I figured, well, this has got to be a book. So anyway, that's sometimes that's how I do it.
That's amazing. That is really amazing to have such a vivid dream like that and remember it, too, when you wake up.
It was just totally amazing. In fact, I told Jerry, my wife, that I dreamt this, and it's about a boy that turns into a mountain man, and his name is Jonah Blue. And from there, it just blew up into 287 pages. So
now, do you find when you have, you know, those vivid dreams that tell you a story that you can really rip through the words, you know, without setting any kind of word count goals? You're just boom, 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 and that's it?
Yes, but I don't often remember the dreams. This particular one I did, and so it had to be a book. Actually, some of the dialogue stayed with me. So, I mean, the dialogue went really fast. And the scenes went really fast. I knew where they were going to be. I knew he was going to be on a riverboat. I knew all of that stuff. So it was just putting it together at that point. And it turned out to be a pretty good story. So,
that needed to be written. It forced its way out.
I think so. And then you can, of course, you'd be able to read a review of that book on www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com. And Amazon, hopefully.
Right.
Okay, so moving a little bit forward now, when you have you ever had writer's block?
Oh, all the time. That's one of the problems of being a pantser. Sometimes you end up just staring at the computer for hours, wondering what to do next because you don't know exactly how they got from point A to point B, and you've got to make it all up.
Right. How do you get yourself out of it? Because we've heard some pretty good stories.
Well, it depends. If I know where the story's going, sometimes I'll hopscotch ahead.
Uh-huh.
And I'll write what happens next and hopefully be able to come back at it. Other times, I've gone into like character sheets where I write up more information about the character in hopes that it will clue me into how this character can overcome whatever is blocking me.
Mm-hmm. Do you find...
But more often than not, I hopscotch.
Yeah, we have found that some of the writers, I mean, we have talked to some writers who sit in the studio and look at us and go, it doesn't exist. And there are some writers who go, well, yeah, but we call it writer's pregnant pause, or we call it this, or we call it that, you know. We just call it writer's block, because that's the name of the show.
I say it is what it is. You know, when you're staring at the screen and you've got that blinking cursor and you have no clue what to write, that's writer's block.
Where are you going next? So you just dig, you know, just got to... Game of Solitaire.
I always keep
and then
game
you turn
of
to Facebook,
open.
And then you turn to YouTube or whatever social media is out there. Next thing you know, the hours have flown by, and you still haven't written a word.
I know, you still haven't written a word, but by God, you've had a lot of good fun reading, you know, watching Gordon Lightfoot, and you know.
You know, I was curious about... I was curious about your other series, the Little Werewolf books.
Right.
Is this aimed at the same audience?
The Little Werewolf is actually more of my clean teen version of the Immortalis series world.
Mm-hmm.
So the Immortalis series was my very first series that I wrote, and the Old Town Pack is a spinoff of the Wolves of that series.
Mm-hmm.
And the Little Werewolf is more aimed at the young adult bracket. It is cleaner. It is no romance. Well, very little romance, and it's got a 16-year-old protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's aimed at that age group, because I had readers who suggested, you know, we would like something that's a little bit softer, cleaner, but still in that same world that we love. So I came up with Giselle, and she is my little werewolf who was lost in the foster care system when she was a puppy. And she's never been adopted. She's never found her forever home, but now there's a family that wants to adopt her.
Ah.
And of course, the mystery surrounding that family is where the story takes off.
Gotcha. Tell me about Rosalind Sparks.
Now, Rosalind Sparks is my alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
That's the naughtier stories, the more racy stories. And that started as a collaboration with an Australian writer friend of mine. We had both worked on a blog called Coffee Fueled Erotica. and we found that we really meshed well. We liked to read each other's stories, we worked well, and we created a lot of fun stories together and published them together, but I didn't want them tied to my main name. I didn't want people thinking, you know, all I wrote was erotica, so I wanted to keep that separate. And I've got a few different stories in there. Some are paranormal. Some are dominance stories. Some are more fantasy stories.
Now, you were...
Did I lose you? My phone went silent.
Oh, no. You're
I'm
you're
just thinking about erotica.
We're just thinking about erotica over here. You're in Henderson, Nevada. And very close to Las Vegas. Writing about vampires in Las Vegas, I would think would be pretty easy, actually. I mean, I think town's full of them.
It's Sin City. It's, you know, constant influx of tourists. I think it would be a veritable buffet for vampires out here.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, I was thinking, you know, you were talking about the werewolf, and you've kind of toned the stories back for the younger generation. But actually, Dissension really wasn't that bad. I would say that probably, you know, high school kids could read it, and it wouldn't be a big issue. Because you really don't use a whole lot of bad language in it.
No, there's not too much language in there. There is a little bit of violence, though.
Well,
and as a mom, I look at my 13-year-old daughter and I say, would I let her read that? And maybe yes, maybe no. She's starting to get to the age where I'd be okay with her reading it. But when I go to shows and other mothers ask me, what's the age range of this? I don't always feel comfortable saying, yeah, go ahead and let your middle schooler or your early high schooler read this.
Right, right. It's like one of the guys who used to work for me, his nephew took one of my books and did a book report on it. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool, except, geez, I hope he didn't, you know, quote out of the book.
That'll wake up the teacher.
That'll wake up the entire classroom. Do you have an agent? Do you use an agent? I know you have a publicist.
I am actually searching for an agent right now. I've got a story out on Query to hopefully pick up an agent and see if we can't attract some of the bigger publishers towards it.
Tell us about your publicist, because we've had a couple conversations with him, and he seems to be a really great guy. And let's just go ahead and give him a plug, if you would.
Well, Mickey's awesome, and I actually met Mickey because of Spilling Ink. Remember I talked about we bring on authors, editors, publicists, anybody who's attached to the writing and publishing world, we want to talk to them. And so we met Mickey through Spilling Ink and developed a relationship with him, and he's been a wonderful resource. He booked me for a few events. I got to be at Phoenix Comic Con. I was a panelist over there recently because of his efforts. He's a really friendly guy. He's very easy to talk to. And he really wants his authors to succeed. You can really feel that about him.
Yeah, he contacted me. I mean, he wanted me to take part in a couple-hour podcast about writing that they're doing in January. And I told him I would love to, except that it was going to be on a Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And guess what? Guess where I'm at Thursday night at 7 o'clock. So he said, geez, you know what? Maybe we'll get him to change the time and the date. If that works for you, I said, sure. So I'd be happy to. We had a quite conversation.
Mickey's very much about connecting people. He's very good at that.
Mickey's a good guy. And also, I have to say, if I can reach my back, I'll pat it for a little bit here. He's a huge fan of the Writer's Block. So, and we actually have another one of his writers on next week. I think it's the last in a sixth writer string. And that is... Who is on next week? Oh, Paris Afton Bonds is on with us next week. So she's one of Mickey's writers. We've had all kinds of them.
Yeah.
But you're the only one that actually lives
right
here in the States. I'm sorry?
He's got quite the stable of authors.
He certainly, most certainly does. He's got some pretty big time ones. I mean, yourself included. So you got to pat yourself on the back if you can.
If I can, okay, I'll give myself a little pat.
like I told you before we went on the air, you have a coffee mug coming that says the Writer's Block on it, and it's a very cool coffee mug. And I would send them to Canada, except that it's too big of a pain in the butt to send them to Canada. So the Canadian writers, unless I can come up with a U.S. address to send them to, I can't send them a mug.
So they'll just have to come here.
So we'll just have to have Mickey give me an address in the States so I can send all these mugs to, and I can put names on them, and he can go ahead and distribute it from there. Anyway, we're going to be running
out. Now, when I get that, thank you, by the way.
Oh, sure.
When I get that, I'm going to make sure to plaster it all over social media.
Well, I hope you do. And I hope you had a good enough time that you'll tell all your friends and of course, give us a good word. And you know, because we're just nice guys here. We just, you know, we try to take care of
our writers. Absolutely. You guys have been wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And like I said, when we're done here, I'm going to send you an email about spilling ink so we can return the favor.
Be happy to. Be very happy to. And in the few minutes we have left, would you give our audience your email address and website and all that good stuff?
Sure. I can be found at katiesalidas.com. It's S-A-L-I-D-A-S, just in case you're wondering. I can also be reached on Twitter at QuixoticKatie. And I am on Facebook, Instagram, basically everywhere. All I have to do is look up my name.
That's true.
And on Facebook, if you find me and friend me there and send me a message, I will send you a link to my private reader group where, like I said earlier in the show, I'm always asking, what do my readers want? So I value your input. Please, please tell me.
Oh, sure. I'll do that probably tomorrow for you. Because I just got a thingy from you saying you're now a friend of mine. So at least I think I did. I don't know.
There you go.
Your name came up. That's...
I sent you a request last night.
Yeah, you did. So, anyway, thank you so much for joining us. It's been just a wonderful hoot having you. And, you know, if you got anything coming up, feel free to call. The show is, it's open. You know, 7 to 8 Thursday nights, you just give us a call and let us know where you're going to be. If you have something special going on, you know, just give us a holler and we'll be more than happy to give you a couple minutes on the air.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me tonight. You guys have been wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. And if you're ever in L.A., give us a call. We always have an empty chair in here. We can always just shove you in there, and you can talk to the author we have on.
Well, that would be so much fun. I'll keep that in mind.
Do that. And thank you so much, Katie, for coming in and joining us. And take care of yourself and keep in touch with us, would you?
Will do. You guys have a great night.
You do as well.
You too.
You have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Katie Salinas. Nice gal.
Very. A very talented writer.
Oh, yes. Extremely talented writer. And, you know, her choice of subject matter is just like...
She doesn't talk like a vampire writer.
She doesn't, but you know, I mean, she writes like one.
I
read when I went through Bram Stoker's book of Dracula. I studied like a day and a half, and then years later, I got a hold of. I actually read the Vampire Lestat first before I read Interview with a Vampire, and Anne Rice just absolutely enthralled me. And the story of Lestat going from when he was a French nobleman, the wolf killer, they called him, all the way up to when he buried himself outside in New York for the concert when he became a big rock and roll star. It's a wonderful story. And it just, you feel like you know him, like you know this guy. And, you know, you want to be Lestat's friend, except, you know, he drinks blood.
It is a drawback.
It can be, especially if you have a cut on your finger. Haste and greed upon his eyes. Henry, thank you so much for coming in with me tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. It was fun. It was fun. I'm looking for reviews now, Henry.
They're coming.
Okay.
Let me read the book first.
That would be a good idea.
Okay.
It's got a great foreword in it. Richard Polinelli wrote the foreword for it. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And... actually, Richard is part of the Tuscany Bay Books, so we've got some of his big titles coming out and redoing, and some of his series coming out in Tuscany Bay too shortly. I think in January, February, we're going to be doing some of Richard's books. So, and you're writing True West. What's your next article?
Oh gosh. You know, the thing is, I write these things so far in advance. Working on one now that's with interview discussion with Norman Lear about his only Western series, The Deputy.
The Deputy.
Which was Henry Fonda's only Western television show.
God, that was 50s.
Yeah, 59 and 60.
Yeah.
Just two seasons. But it's a very interesting show, and it's really holds up very nicely. You know, one thing I liked about it was that time when most Western series were half hour.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I just think that there was a high quality of storytelling, and that show, The Have Gun Will Travels, the first six seasons mm-hmm. of Gunsmoke, when mm-hmm. they're just half hours.
Right.
That the hour and 90-minute shows never really captured consistently.
No, I think they took a half an hour show and made it into an hour.
They didn't have more plot in the hour ones.
Right,
it was just more talk.
And in the Virginians specifically, because that was an hour and a half, if you recall. And they would take these half hour, 45-minute scripts and they would stretch them into like hour and a half.
Yes, let's see them riding some farther along the trail.
Right, or they'd grab people from the TV show that was on at the same time, Laredo.
Right.
And then they'd shove Trampas with the guys from Laredo, and that would be a two-parter.
Right.
Wow, fun stuff. Henry, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you.
And for all of you that listen to the Writer's Block, and I know there are quite a few of you, next week we have, as I said, we have writer Paris. What did I say her name was?
Not Hilton.
No. I have it written down here. Paris. Here we go. Paris Afton Bond. She writes about the gathering the clans, about the Scottish clans in North Ooh. Carolina during the Revolutionary War.
Oh, very interesting.
Interesting story. I'm about three quarters of the way through it, and it's just, it's very well written. Extremely well written, but it's they speak in Scottish, and it's you have to read it with a dictionary. But we'll talk to Afton or Ronan or Paris about that next week. The following week, we have a return visit with Rochelle Wisoff Fields. Her first book came out last year. Say Kaddish for me, or Kaddish, I guess it's pronounced. And she's got another book. I don't know. I have not read it yet, but I think it's the same family. And then she's also got a coffee table book coming out of her art, and her art is absolutely phenomenal. So Rochelle will be on with us on the 26th, which Russ will be back with us that night. And, Rochelle loves Russ, so it's a good thing he'll be back with us. And other than that, this is another Thursday gone down the drain. We'll be back next Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time right here on LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.